Welcome to Journal Club for February 19th, 2025. I'm Malcolm Dix. If you watched the HBO miniseries Chernobyl a few years back, then this is a story you know well. In 1986, there was an explosion in Reactor 4 at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in modern-day Ukraine. This accident released massive amounts of radiation and created an environment that was lethal not just to humans and animals, but also to machines. You see, when Soviet engineers sent in remote-controlled robots to aid in the cleanup, many of them failed almost immediately. The radiation fried their electronics. It caused their systems to glitch, their sensors to malfunction, and their circuits to burn out. Some of the robots just stopped moving, others spun around aimlessly, and others lost communication with their operators. This led to one of the darkest moments in an already tragic event. Officials decided to send in what they termed bio-robots instead. Of course, these weren't robots at all. They were just workers, clad in protective gear. Gear that was nearly pointless and did very little to protect these people. In the aftermath of this disaster, a lot of things changed. The IAEA's safety standards were strengthened, reactor designs were modified to include passive safety systems and containment structures, and regulations on reactor safety and emergency preparedness were put in place. And on the robotics side, the engineering community was kicked into high gear. The mandate was simple. Build robots that are so strong and so hardened against radiation that no country will ever need to send in bio-robots again. Today's paper picks that story up 39 years later. It's a check-in, a status update from the field, that walks us through the current state-of-the-art for nuclear cleanup robots. This industry has been even busier than they expected it to be. While there have not been that many nuclear disasters in the intervening years, Fukushima Daiichi and Three Mile Island being notable exceptions, there has been a significant uptick in the number of nuclear power plants being decommissioned. And as it turns out, the tools you need to clean up a power plant after a disaster are not too different from the tools you need to decommission it. Decommissioning is the act of dismantling a nuclear power plant and managing its radioactive materials. It happens when a plant is damaged, deemed obsolete, or just reaches its end of operational life. It's actually fairly common now. Every year, 10 to 15 plants are decommissioned worldwide. And like disaster cleanup, decommissioning is extremely risky. You're dealing with high radiation zones and contaminated materials. You're having to remove radioactive components, transport spent nuclear fuel, and operate extremely close to reactor cores, coolant systems, and waste storage facilities. This, too, is not a job for human beings. So over the last few decades, we've seen a dovetailing of these two types of activities, decommissioning and disaster cleanup, and the advent of robots and techniques that can be used for either. In this paper, the authors bring us up to speed on the bleeding edge of this kind of tech, and they also make the case for two more advancements, haptic digital twins, that's HDTs, and assisted operations, AO. Let's dive into the state of the industry first, and then we'll explore HDTs and AO separately to see why these authors have become proponents of them. Unlike the machines deployed at Chernobyl, modern decommissioning robots are built for precision, endurance, and resilience. The most resilient among them incorporate radiation-hardened processors, often built with silicon-on-insulator SOI technology, or triple modular redundancy circuits. These kinds of circuits can tolerate prolonged exposure without suffering logic errors or physical degradation. In addition to robust electronics, many of these robots have shielded enclosures, typically made of lead-lined housing or boron-infused polymers to further reduce radiation exposure. And some of these designs minimize electronics altogether. They use hydraulic and pneumatic actuators instead of electromechanical motors to ensure that critical functions remain operational even in the most extreme conditions. As far as mobility goes, early systems relied on tracked and wheeled robots, but modern designs have started incorporating legged mobility instead. Boston Dynamics' Spot robot is a good example of this. It's that four-legged robot that looks like a dog, and it's been modified for nuclear plant use itself. But this work doesn't just happen on the ground. Radiation-hardened aerial drones, such as Flyability's Elio series, are increasingly being used for mapping and surveying reactor interiors. They use LIDAR, SLAM, that's simultaneous localization and mapping, and high-resolution radiation imaging to generate 3D models of contaminated spaces. This allows operators to assess damage and plan decommissioning strategies from afar. But in addition to land and air, some of the work needs to be done underwater. Many decommissioned plants still contain highly radioactive fuel assemblies stored in cooling pools. So you need to use special submersible robots to inspect, retrieve, and transport these materials. They integrate sonar, high-resolution cameras, radiation gauges, and manipulator arms to retrieve submerged radioactive debris. Some systems also employ automated sediment sampling and chemical analysis to assess contamination levels in surrounding water. And of course, all of these systems have state-of-the-art robotic arms, such as the KUKA LBR and the Schilling Titan manipulators. These are equipped with force torque sensors and advanced path planning algorithms. Some decommissioning robots even feature dual arm configurations. That being said, the use of AI in the field has been decidedly limited, and that's by choice. Regulatory constraints, such as in the UK, currently mandate human-in-the-loop control. The UK's Office for Nuclear Regulation requires that all remote-operated systems allow for immediate human intervention. While this doesn't wipe out all AI, it does prevent some of the more forward-looking advancements from taking hold. And this is probably a good thing. Nuclear decommissioning really doesn't have a margin for error. You want the most accurate and precise and knowledgeable agents that you can get to perform these tasks. And, at least for now, that means a human controlling a robot, not the robot controlling itself. With all that in mind, the authors of this paper are suggesting two measured and conservative advancements, new tech that they say can push the envelope without causing harm or creating undue risk. Those technologies are HDTs and AO. HDTs are haptic digital twins. A digital twin is a virtual model of a physical system that updates in real time. It's widely used in manufacturing and aerospace, but its potential in nuclear decommissioning is only beginning to be explored. Side note, for more on digital twins, see our episode from January 18th. The haptic component refers to the addition of force feedback, allowing operators to physically feel interactions within the virtual environment. This means that instead of relying on visual feeds alone, engineers can practice complex decommissioning tasks in a simulated space where they can touch and manipulate objects as if they were physically present. HDTs, they argue, can help workers develop expertise without setting foot in a radioactive environment. They could also assist during live operations, providing operators with a more intuitive way to control robotic systems. The authors are also advocating for AO, which stands for Assisted Operations. In traditional teleoperation, human operators directly control every movement of a robotic system. This requires significant training and can be exhausting over long shifts. AO introduces a layer of services between the human and the machine. For example, instead of moving a robot manually in all three dimensions, an operator could set a general path and the system would automatically adjust for precision and collision avoidance. In a high radiation environment where mistakes can be costly, AO could help ensure that robotic arms do not accidentally collide with critical structures or drop hazardous materials. And more advanced systems incorporate semi-autonomous functions, such as pre-programmed actions for repetitive tasks. A robot tasked with cutting and removing contaminated piping, for example, could execute the necessary movements automatically while the operator supervises and intervenes only when needed. While full autonomy is not yet feasible or permissible in this industry, AO could provide a step toward improving efficiency and reducing human fatigue without violating any regulation. In the end, the authors are cautiously optimistic about this industry. There are advancements like these on the horizon, but the future still remains uncertain. The field is progressing, but at a deliberately cautious pace. While other industries focus on rapid iteration, nuclear safety demands a much slower approach. Engineers may develop incredible tools, but proving their reliability in a nuclear environment is a very high bar. So for now, progress will continue to be incremental, but each step forward brings the industry closer to a future where no human being ever has to risk their life in a hazardous radiation zone. If you're interested in going deeper on any of the technologies I mentioned today, then I'd highly recommend that you download the paper. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. Hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.